Now, originally, I was supposed to do the commandment, honor your father and mother, but we had a little problem. See, I'm not a father or a mother, and that probably wasn't going to work real well. So I talked to Dave. I said, can I switch it up? And so and today, instead of doing honor your father and mother, we're going to do you shall not murder. Now, when I started working on this, and I'm just going to, like I said, I'm going to be very transparent with you guys today. Until 6 o'clock this morning, I was doing the sermon, you shall honor your father and mother. But by the time 11 o'clock rolled around last night, I had three lines of text on my word processor on my computer. The first one said, I think it was like mission intro. Then it said, goat video. Then it said, honor your father and mother. That was it. That's all I had at 11 o'clock last night. And I'd been working all, just how do you intro this? What am I supposed to talk about? How should I do this? And I said, I'm going to bed. And when I wake up, God's going to say, you're teaching on this. So when I woke up, I opened up the Ten Commandments and started reading. And the first thing I saw was, the next one is you shall not murder. And I went, perfect. I've never killed anybody. This is the one I'm going to do. But no, honestly, you know, when I was thinking about it, I was like, how do you do you shall not murder? That's pretty cut and dry, right? Don't kill people. Okay? Well, I started thinking about, should I talk about killing people? Should that be what I talk about for my message? I was like, probably not. Started thinking about some more. Should I do gang violence? Bad. Nah, I'm not going to do that. Should I talk about abortion? Cutting edge, rough topic. It's wrong. No, I'm not going to do that either. Because, I mean, they're all wrong, okay? They're all sins. They're all bad things. And all of them include killing people. And I guess that makes them all murder. But I can't help but wonder if there's more to this commandment than just don't kill people. Because if you read the other commandments, they weren't so cut and dry either. Each one of them, there was so much more than just don't do this. Because the reality is, if all we have to do is not kill people, that's an easy commandment to follow, right? Okay, I won't kill people. Because the reality is, I went and looked up worldwide stats, and do you realize in the U.S., like the murder stats in the U.S., we're like 24th in the world in murder right now. And it's like 0.61 or 0.452 something or other people are killed for every 1,000, which I thought had been a whole lot worse than that, right? I mean, in Detroit alone, I thought it'd be worse than that. But it wasn't as bad as I thought. I'm thinking, you know, this doesn't seem like a hard commandment to keep. People do it, but for the vast majority of us, we don't kill people. Am I right? Maybe I'm wrong. Am I right? Okay, just checking. I was getting a little nervous. I think I'm going to go home now. But that's not something that's difficult. So I kept reading this, and I started seeing, there's got to be more. So I figured, well, if I'm gonna find out what more there could be to this, who am I going to ask to figure this out for me? Jesus. So I open up to the book of Matthew. And if you've got Matthew chapter 5, I want you to go ahead and open up your Bibles to that right now. We're going to be reading verses 21 and 22. And Jesus actually goes into a little more detail into what this whole do not murder thing is all about. So if you've got that open, I want you just to read along with me. And it says this. You've heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Now, all of it makes sense until you get this little section where it says Raca. Now, how many of you people walked around and said that to somebody recently? Yeah. I read that and I'm going, Raca? Everybody say it real quick, Raca. Okay, so I looked that up to figure out what the heck that meant. And so I looked at it, I found out in Jewish times, when Jesus was, well, Jewish had been around forever. In Jesus' time, the Jews would look at other people, and if they said Raca to them, that meant they were worthless. It didn't just mean they were worthless, it meant they were meaningless. In other words, if you said Raca to somebody, you were basically saying that they don't even need to be alive. You were saying that person's life was absolutely worthless, and they might as well be dead. So is it possible, after hearing that, because Jesus is the one who's putting this out there, is it possible that maybe God was trying to tell us to value life more than he was saying not to take it? Follow me on this, okay? Because this is maybe different than you've heard with this commandment before. But maybe we need to understand that murdering someone isn't just about taking a life. It's making the statement that there is no importance in having life. So with that in mind, could this mean more than just physically murdering another person? In his book, Sex God, Rob Bell tells this story of a group of British soldiers who liberated a German concentration camp. And Lieutenant Colonel Merson Willett Gonin wrote this in his diary. And I want you to listen to this. This is pretty interesting. He says this, "I can give no adequate description of the horror camp in which my men and myself were to spend the next month of our lives. It was just a barren wilderness, as bare as a chicken run. Corpses lay everywhere, some in huge piles. Sometimes they lay singly or in pairs where they had fallen. It took little time to get used to seeing men, women, and children collapsed as you walked by them. One knew that 500 a day were dying and that 500 a day were going on dying for weeks before anything we could do would have the slightest effect. It was, however, not easy to watch a child choking to death from diphtheria when you knew a tracheotomy and nursing would save it. One saw women drowning in their own vomit because they were too weak to turn over, men eating worms to live and now could scarcely tell the difference. Piles of corpses, naked and obscene, with a woman too weak to stand, propping herself against them as she cooked the food we had given her over an open fire. Men and women crouching down just anywhere in the open field, relieving themselves. In a dysentery tank in which the remains of a child floated." Those are terrible things. And for most of us, that's probably the worst account we may have heard of the concentration camps that the Germans had. But why is that one of the worst things we've ever heard? Is it because people were starving? Is it because they were dying? Was it because of all the human bodies lying around? I mean, those are all terrible, awful things, horrible things. But I'd like to say that it goes a whole lot deeper than that. I think it's more primal. It's more basic. I think the real sin here in this situation was that the Germans were taking away these people's humanity. See, when God created man, he created mankind to be the rulers of this planet. That was our intention. He created us to rule this planet. He created man to be more. And in the creation story, we read this. It says, "Then God said, 'Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground.'" So God created mankind in his own image. "In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, 'Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground.'" Unfortunately for those people in the concentration camp, they'd become animals, squatting wherever to use a bathroom, eating anything they could find. The concentration camp had literally taken their humanity away. And in the process, they took away the image of God from those people. Animals weren't created in the image of God. People were. And all these awful things were done, but the worst thing they did of all of it was they simply took away their humanity. Now, I know some of you are probably thinking, John, that was like decades ago. People don't do that now. You know, that's just old stuff. We liberated that. People are good now. Well, I'm going to read some stats to you. And these could be shocking. Some of you may already know them, but I want to read these to you and see what you think. In 2007, that's just a few years ago, 27 million people are in modern-day slavery across the world. 27 million. 800,000 people are being trafficked across international borders every year. 1 million children are being exploited by the global commercial sex trade every year. 70% of women being trafficked are being used in the commercial sex trade, which means that 30% of these women are actually victims of forced labor, slavery. in the U.S. alone, and this is right in our backyard, in the U.S. alone, 14,500, between 14,500 and 17,500 foreign nationals are trafficked into the U.S. every year. And 244,000 American children and youth, are estimated to be at risk of child sexual exploitation, including commercial sexual exploitation. And the average age of prostitution in the United States, as far as the entry age, is between the ages of 12 and 14. It's in our backyard. This isn't something that's happening in another country. This is happening right where we live. And there are literally millions of people every day who are having the image of God taken away from them. They're becoming property. They're being treated as less than human. And in the process, they're being murdered because they're no longer human. As a church, how do we respond, and how do we make a difference in that? How do we make a change? And it's not just slavery that's causing this. Every day there are people right here in Lexington and in cities around the country, people are dying of starvation. And they're having to beg for food and lower themselves and basically get trampled upon by most people and treated as though they're garbage and they could be thrown away. Children in third world countries are dying daily from foodborne diseases and starvation. And unfortunately, many of us feel as though we're helpless to defend these people or to do anything to make it better. What do we do? You know, this past week I got to go to Jamaica. And one of the coolest things happened while we were down there. I told you about this guy, Anthony, who was baptized. Well, let me give you a little backstory on Anthony. Anthony had just gotten out of prison recently for murder. He had actually killed people. And Anthony, he showed up at church, and Jerry saw him and knew his story. So he went out to talk to him before he came into the church, you know, just to make sure if he was in the right place. Because a murderer is a pretty rough person, and they wanted to make sure he wasn't mad with anybody in the church because a lot of that stuff happens. Well, he starts talking to Jerry, and Jerry shares with him that he'd just recently been released from jail, and the cops had talked to him. And the person he had killed, well, somebody wanted to avenge that person's death by killing Anthony. And so the cops had actually come to him and said, you better go back to prison because it's a whole lot safer right now for you than being out here. This guy was at rock bottom. He had nothing. He was at the lowest point he could possibly be at in his life. And honestly, he didn't know where else to turn. So he came to church because someone said, man, you need Jesus. So he took them at their word and he showed up at church. And when he walked in, there was no mistaking he was different than everybody else there. He walks in and he's dressed in all white from head to toe. And he's got this long goatee, just this Jamaican dude with a long goatee that's right down to here. And he's all in white except for his black boxer shorts, which he's tucked his shirt into and then pulled up almost to his chest, hanging above his pants. So it's just as this guy walks in, you knew something was just off, you know? He walks in, and this is what he does. He walks in, he goes to the front of the room, and he does this. Dead serious look on his face, shoulders propped up, and arms like this. And the service goes on and continues, and the worship is going on, and you see the shoulders. I'm sitting behind him, and the whole time I'm just kind of wondering what's going on here because I hadn't heard what had happened to him yet. I just saw this guy walking and looked like he was mad. Well, as the service went on, his shoulders dropped. And before too long, his arms came down to his side, and the next thing you know is he's just clapping along with the music, and he's smiling, and he's singing, and he's just loving the moment. He's just caught up in this situation. And at the end of the message that day, and let me tell you something about this service. This service went from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. 4 hours. So no one is ever allowed to pick on Dave Kibler for a long sermon ever again, because Dave's never taken us 4 hours before. But Jerry spoke, I think, for almost two of that, the minister there. But at the end of his message, when the invitation came, Anthony got up out of his seat and walked forward, and he shared his story and just cried like a baby because he knew that he needed Christ in his life. He knew more than anything he needed Christ in his life. And Jerry, the senior minister, could have easily said, well, it's okay. You know, what you did wasn't so bad. Well, no, he didn't do that. Jerry said, you're right. You did horrible things, and you need to repent. And, you know, he agreed. Anthony just sobbed and stood at the front of this room. And about that time, he asked for his confession. Anthony gave his confession. And that day, he was baptized into Christ. And it was such an amazing experience. I felt like not to share it with everybody else would just be hogging it. So we got it on video, and I want to show you guys this baptism today. So if you guys will play this for us. Here's the amazing thing. That was just day one. Our mission trip, it just steamrolled. And everybody who was on the trip that was in church today, all of them just lost it when we watched that video because that was such a huge experience for all of us that week. And I talked to Anthony. He kept coming back throughout the week. And he and I actually got the opportunity to sit down and talk one day. And while we were talking, I said, Anthony, if there's something you could just do over, if there's something you could just have happen, what would it be? And he said, I'd want those people to be back from the dead. And I said, okay. And I said, why is that? And he goes, because I'd want to tell them that I'm sorry and then tell them about Jesus. And I thought that was amazing. And so I said, well, what does it mean now for you? I mean, what's the greatest thing now that you've found Christ, now that you're a Christian? And he looked at me, and this is what he said. He goes, I have my humanity back. Of course, he said, humanity. But, you know, he got it. Because you got to understand something, guys. Do not murder means do not be the one that takes away humanity, because in the process you lose your own. And that's exactly what happened to Anthony. He lost his own humanity because he had lessened the value of other human beings. He understood it's got to be different. And I know that Dave and I have said it 100 times, and we do it all the time, but I can't emphasize enough why we need to continue doing mission work. That right there is the best example of why mission work is so important. Because there are people who have lost the image of God in their life. They've lost their humanity. Jude 23 says, save others by snatching them from the fire. That's our job, guys. Pulling people from the fire. If we're inwardly focused, we're going to miss our calling. If we're inwardly focused, we won't be able to cause change. And if we are inwardly focused, we will be blind to the corruption and the evil that is robbing people of the image of God every single day. Our church is called Catalyst for a reason. Dave and I didn't just sit around and go, hey, Catalyst, cool name. You know, that wasn't the purpose of naming Catalyst. We love what the word meant. And if you look at the simple definition of the word catalyst, it simply means a person or thing that precipitates an event or change. We chose the name Catalyst because we want to be a movement. We want to see change happen. And every day we're seeing people robbed of their humanity. We can't make a change if we don't do something. The reality is, guys, that's why we're a mission-minded church. That's why this kind of stuff is so important. That's why we're a church that's planning at least 3 more trips like this over the next year. And that's why none of us can turn a blind eye to what is going on around us. If Catalyst is only here to serve people who sit in these seats each week, if our whole purpose is to make you guys happy, I'm going out the door and I'm not coming back. I'm not here for that. I'm not here just so that this group of people here can be happy with themselves. I'm here because we need to make a change. We got a world that's falling apart. We got people all over the place who are being murdered. Maybe not physically, but they are emotionally. They are physically. They are spiritually. And we can't sit by and allow it. People are having the daily norms of food and shelter taken away from them, and we can't sit by and allow it. People are having the image of God taken away from them, and we can't sit by and allow it. Guys, people need to feel beautiful. Now, when I say that, I'm not talking about, you know, fashion models and Vogue magazine. I'm talking about people need to feel beautiful because they were created by God. They need to feel beautiful because God created them. Each one of us was created specifically the way we are. But we can rob people of that. We can take it away from them so easily. You know, the way we talk to people, if we insult them, when we knock people down, when we treat them like they're less than worth anything, we're robbing them a little bit more of their humanity. And that is not what God called us to do. In that concentration camp that I was talking about earlier, there was finally, one day came when there was a turning point and the mood changed. And it was the strangest thing that made that happen. Should we let them know we can hear them? We can hear you back there, Patrick. Did you like that? That was good, wasn't it? Small service, we can do that. You know what it was that turned everything around for them? A box was delivered. Just a box, probably about like that. And when they opened the box up, it was just full of tubes of lipstick. So they just started handing it out to the women. Why not? They didn't know what else to do with it. The women just grabbed it and looked at it, and their eyes lit up. And they ran and found a mirror, and they put on the lipstick. And for the first time in years, some of those women felt beautiful again. All of a sudden, they felt human again. They felt like for the first time in a long time, they actually mattered. Because God created us beautifully. And these ladies were finally able to claim the image of God once again. If we're to follow God's calling, then we need to reclaim life. We need to reclaim the image of God. And guys, that is why you shall not murder.